Good morning. It is time to get up with Dallas, where the D in Big D stands for despair. Are we on the verge of a Buccaneer blowout on opening night? Meanwhile, Tampa Tom going next level. We'll tell you why, whatever your expectations are for him this year, they are not high enough. And we will explain the inexplicable, exactly how this team still has an excellent chance to win the championship, despite a suspect start on Saturday night. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now and continuing what has been a very special week for those of you who are regular viewers. For the first time in over a year, Dan Orlovsky is in our studio.
I would jump up and celebrate, but my pants are too tight and they would rip.
They are. I can confirm.
So, well, I'm back.
Super tight.
Aren't they always? That's why we're excited to have him back. Kimberly Martin in our studio as well, breaking stories. Tim Hasselbeck is going to throw a few touchdowns before this day is over as well. We are ready to go. And let's begin with Get Up and Go with news from Baltimore. And this is interesting. A source telling our Adam Schefter, the Ravens have signed three-time Pro Bowler Le'Veon Bell to their practice squad to help their injury-filled backfield. They've already lost J.K. Dobbins and Justin Hill at that position to season-ending injuries. We'll see if Bell gets a chance to prove what he has left. Tennis. A day after turning 19, Layla Fernandez, the unseeded Canadian teenager, defeated Alina Svitolina to reach the U.S. Open semifinals. She becomes the youngest player to get that far in the Open women's bracket since Maria Sharapova back in 2005. Bad news Yankees. Ace Gerrit Cole exiting last night. A loss to the Blue Jays with two outs in the fourth. Tightness in his left hamstring. Manager Aaron Boone doesn't sound overly concerned. Says there's no MRI scheduled on Cole's hamstring. We'll see. But this news is not good for a team that has just a half game lead over the Red Sox for the top wild card spot and a couple of teams looming right behind them. You see it there. Red Sox, Blue Jays, Mariners all have easier remaining schedules than the Yankees do. We'll see how that plays out. Meanwhile, we are on the eve of the start of the NFL season. The Cowboys and Buccaneers will kick it off tomorrow night. The defending champs, clear favorites at home, are FPI giving Tampa Bay a 70% chance to win, and they will have a fully healthy Tom Brady, and that will have an entirely new meaning this year, which is tough news for the other 31 teams. He has shed the sleeve that he's worn on his left knee for 13 years since he tore the ACL back then. Meanwhile, Dak Prescott, not quite as healthy. His return from a broken right ankle delayed this preseason by a shoulder injury. Now they're going without All-Pro guard Zach Martin as well. So Jerry Jones, excited for the opener?
Is it obvious? Yes. A great way for us to open this season. We have so much to gain by having a good experience this Thursday night. Everybody wants to win. We're coming in with some challenges. Then to sit up here and play a team that really pulled it off in an unconventional way last year and really prove something with how they the year they got out of their quarterback Brady, and then us be able to step up here right in the middle of all of this and start our journey. It's a great opportunity. It's as the storybook writer wrote it.
Well, so the storybook says one thing and the sports book says another. Back in May, Caesars opened this game at Tampa Bay -6. That number has jumped to as much as 9.5. Currently is at 8. So the Buccaneers, an 8-point favorite, and to that I simply say give the points. Let me start with you, Dan Orlovsky. I made your buddy Marcus Spears in that same seat mad at me earlier this week.
I loved it.
Look, are we staring at the potential for a blowout tomorrow night?
Yeah, but this game was going to be a blowout before the Zach Martin news. This was a one-sided affair before the Zach Martin not going to be able to play news. I also believe that the last time we watched this Dallas football team in a season be completely healthy, they were 8-8. Go back to last year even. They were 0-4. What is anybody thinking? Where's the advantage for the Dallas Cowboys? Where? They don't have a single advantage. Offensive line? No. Defensive line? No. Pass game? No, because the skill position players for the Cowboys are going to be so minimized because of the Tampa Bay pass rush. Run game? No. The Buccaneers have one of the best run defenses in the NFL. So this was always going to be a one-sided affair. That being said, I'm not going to judge the Cowboys off this game because I expect them to lose. But I'm not going to judge them because they don't have their best player. Dak hasn't practiced that much. So I want to give them time to develop as a football team. If they somehow win, which they're not going to, that will make me look at them very differently. But this was always going to to be a one-sided affair, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will mud hole the Cowboys Thursday night.
Mud hole is a new way of describing it. Kimberly, we've talked so much, you and I, over the course of time about the Dak of it all. And now here he walks into this situation. I'm not sure for his return if you could have drawn up a scenario that would feel worse going in than it is for him to make his return.
Think about it. What would you want for Dak? A seamless transition back to football. It's been almost a year since we've seen him on the field, and he doesn't have his best offensive weapon, and I mean his guard. Zach Martin, don't get it twisted. Dak is great, Zeke is great, but Zach Martin really is the key to everything, and not just protecting Dak, but most of Zeke's runs have come behind Zach Martin. So when you think about how Martin's absence will affect everything, it affects and touches every aspect of this offense. So like Dan was saying, people didn't expect the Cowboys to have a chance in this one, and that was before Zach Martin.
And even think about this quickly because, you know, we're talking about not having your starting right guard. Lyle Collins is dealing with a splinter in his right shoulder. And then everyone's talking about the Bucs defensive line. If you read the local stuff, their first round pick, Joe Tryon, has been absolutely dominant and unblockable. So again, all 22 back plus a first round pick that seems to be dominant with an offensive line in Dallas that is hurting already.
Tryon's an outside pass rusher who sat out last year because of COVID from Washington. But as you to the point you're making, sounds like he's off to a great start with them. Tim Hasselbeck, you're sitting and listening to all of this. Anything you take issue with?
No, there's part of me that thinks, like, what are we talking about? Like, hey, Zach Martin may not play. Like, that's going to be some type of differentiator in this. Look, I see it like Dan. I mean, the reality is, Zach Martin or not, Tampa's just a much better football team. Right. They are right now, and I think by a wide margin. He's right. Where is the advantage in any segment of those teams? Tampa Bay has a Pro Bowl roster, almost like across the board. They are a really, really good football team, top to bottom, both sides of the ball. And when you look at Dallas, there are a bunch of question marks. And look, I think Dak's going to have a great year. He is a guy coming off a big injury who missed a ton of training camp because his shoulder was sore. You know, you got offensive line issues. You got guys on the defensive side of the ball that have really proved nothing yet in this league. So I think there are a number of factors that would kind of drive you down the path of looking at Tampa Bay winning easily.
Okay, so let's leave that there for the moment. A little later in the program, we will diagram the path for the Cowboys to pull off what we all think would be a big surprise. But let's talk about the other star in this game, the true star, and that's Tom Brady, embarking on his 22nd NFL season. Here he is talking about his mindset.
Really just a whole nother year and experience. So I think it's just more of, we got a chance to go out and play the 2021 team the best we possibly can. I think our coaches have put us in a great position to be successful. Our personnel department, Jason's done a great job, and we got a lot of continuity, got a lot of things to build on, a lot more experience together. So that's really all you can ask for as players, is to be in the position that we're in. You know, as good as we were, as we played, you know, with the same group of guys, I'd love to see us, you know, see where we can get this year.
Okay, so Tim Hasselbeck, as I was looking through your notes, whatever people's expectations are for Brady at age 44, I think yours are higher. What do you see happening this year?
I think he's going to play fantastic. I don't think we're seeing any drop-off. I think he's going to be better than he was a year ago in Tampa. There is a feeling from coaches on that coaching staff that Brady could have a career year. Now, some of them went back and looked at some of the things that he's accomplished in his career. And so clearly, I think it's 2007, you go back and the numbers are monstrous. But they have seen practices where they're looking around and they're saying, well, I said it a second ago, they feel like they have a Pro Bowl roster. They think they're that good. Listen to Brady talk about continuity and experience together. Let's not forget, last year, you know, he comes down during a weird offseason and they're meeting and getting kicked off of local high school fields. Like, this is a team that I think is going to start much faster, and I think they're going to continue to get better as the year goes on.
And so, again, the 07 season that Tim is talking about, and you just saw some pictures, that was the year they got Randy Moss. That was the year they went 16-0 in the regular season. Brady basically rewrote the record books that year and was the league MVP. A lot of those records were subsequently broken by Peyton Manning. But you, Dan, also have super high expectations for Brady this year.
Yeah, Brady's going to focus on two numbers, 17 and 55. 17-0 is a reality for Tom Brady and this football team. It is a focus point for Tom Brady and this football team. And I think if they get past week three and week four, week three they go on the road to LA for the Rams, and week four they go on the road back to New England. If they get past this, or past those 2 weeks, this becomes a very real thing for them to go 17-0, because week 10 is the Washington football team, and then week 14 is Buffalo. So 17-0 is a reality. And then 55 touchdowns. Now everyone's going, Tom Brady's not going to throw 55 touchdowns. Tom Brady threw 30 touchdowns in their last 11 games last year. So 55 touchdowns with 17 games is about 3 touchdowns a game. It is a reality that he is going to go chase down Peyton Manning's 55 touchdowns in a season record. They have the ability, they have the protection, they have the skill position people. And again, in his last 11 games last year, after the bye week, when their first 7 or 8 weeks, they stunk on offense, were very average, he threw just about 3 touchdowns a game. I truly believe 17-0 is not only a potential reality, it's a focus point by Tom Brady, and I truly believe that throwing for 55 touchdowns and breaking Peyton Manning's record is a potential reality. You can see 55 and 50. I just think they have the talent to do it, and it's not asking too much. It's 3 touchdowns a game.
Yeah, that 50, you saw it at the bottom of your screen. That was the record at the time. You see Peyton broke it, and Mahomes has subsequently matched it. The 17-0 is the piece of this that I'm most fascinated by, Kimberly, because it's the one thing Brady hasn't done.
Right.
You ask, what is the one thing he hasn't accomplished? Mm-hmm. And he said during the offseason he would give up 2 of his Super Bowl rings to have had that perfect year. If they get a chance to make a run at it, I believe they will make that run.
I'm 100% with you guys. I don't think that sounds crazy. I don't think it's hyperbole. Because when you think about Brady, at his essence, at his core, who is he? He's a guy that people overlooked in the draft. He's a guy that is constantly thinking about all the knocks and things that people say when people write him off. The fact that people are saying, well, he's 44. Like, at some point, you know, it's so hard to repeat as Super Bowl champions. Like, the stats and the numbers say Listen, I said on Monday, he is Beyonce in the NFL. He literally is that guy that the stats and the numbers, he supersedes all that. You cannot put him in a box and say history says this, because Brady does not care about history. Brady is trying to make his own history. Yeah. So 17-0, that's the goal, because that's the thing that he hasn't done.
And in many ways, he's kind of playing with house money.
Yep.
The legacy is cemented.
Right.
The greatest ever conversation is over. So to win another Super Bowl, sure, it's going to be great, and that's what they're chasing, but it's not a needed thing. To go and get undefeated regular season 17-0 and then go do it, it kind of enhances it even more so. He would not take a decline if they don't win the Super Bowl this year.
That's what I'm saying. It's you know, Bart Scott said the other day, you know, it's very hard to be hungry when you're full. You have to find something to motivate you, something you've never accomplished. It's the one thing missing from the resume. And you know it eats at all of those guys because they game so close. All right, we'll see. Let me break on that thought. So much to come as we talk football with you all morning long. Up next, the Chiefs are the class of the AFC. But does one of their conference rivals have the recipe to knock them off this year? We'll tell you which one. Plus, don't leave Clemson for dead just yet. Our group will tell you why they still have a great shot to win it all. That's on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get Up is brought to you by Hulu's Wu-Tang, an American Saga. New episodes streaming Wednesdays only on Hulu. All right, Tim Hasselbeck, let's go through some quick quarterback reads heading into week one. Which quarterback are you most interested to see getting on the field week one? Tim.
Yo, give me a little Mac Jones. Listen, he wins the job in New England. That's fantastic. But now you got to go do it in the regular season. And I think you've got to do it with talent around you that maybe isn't all that great. How much better does he make the guys around him? I think will tell us a lot about Mac Jones going forward. Really excited to watch him play.
Okay, I like that. The guy he'll face is Tua, who, of course, also an Alabama product. What do you need to see from Tua week one?
Look, I need to see Tua play like the player he was drafted to be. Remember, he's a top five pick. You don't draft top five picks to just be okay, to be super safe with the football. You're looking for somebody that can elevate the play of the people around you, make plays, be better than the X's and O's. I'm looking for Tua to make that step going forward.
Okay, and then let's talk about what might be the biggest matchup of week one. What does Baker Mayfield need to do to beat Kansas City Sunday?
Look, he needs to be aggressive, but not have a critical turnover. You know, easier said than done. But I think when you look at the talent around him, obviously they're going to have a good running game. They've got excellent wide receivers on the perimeter. He needs to be aggressive with the football. They need big plays, but he just can't have the critical error that's the one differentiator in the outcome of the football game. And so that's what I think Baker's got to do.
Well, this is fascinating. We had Marcus in here yesterday, and he and I were talking about what exactly is the formula to beat Kansas City, and does Cleveland have it? This is what Marcus said.
Here's the thing you got to do to the Chiefs, all right? If you had a dream of keeping them 12 points, you better keep the damn football from an offensive standpoint. They can bleed you with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. The Browns are more suited to put together 12, 13 play drives because of the way that they play football and the way Stefanski values being in third and short situations. Last year, we saw the Las Vegas Raiders just go toe-to-toe, deep ball after deep ball, and you beat the Chiefs that way. That's a slippery slope because we know what happened last time. The Browns can bludgeon you, and they can keep Pat Mahomes off the field.
So, and anyone who watches NFL Live would know, not surprisingly, Dan Orlovsky takes issue with everything Marcus just said. Go ahead, big
Tell me you're a defensive guy without telling me you're a defensive guy. Like, listen, if you think you're going to beat the Chiefs by running the ball, you're going to get Bishop Sycamore. You will get run right out the stadium, big fella. You and Jeff Saturday are high for thinking that's the best way to beat the Chiefs. I heard Marcus say that styles make fights, right? You better go haymaker for haymaker against the Kansas City Chiefs. With this new offensive line, they're going to score 30 a game just showing up. Just showing up. So you can't think, oh, we're just going to run the football. Because here's the thing. If you run the football, you slow the game down, you minimize your possessions. You better score every possession. You better almost be perfect in every possession. If you look at great offenses in the NFL, they score a touchdown or a field goal on 50% of their drives. The 07 Patriots that we talked about with Brady this morning, they scored on 51%. That is outstanding. You can't do that against the Chiefs run game-wise and think that you're going to win. You have to go score 40. That Raiders game last year, they had five plays. Five that covered over 40 yards. The Browns are capable of doing it, but they have to go, and this is their philosophy for the 9,000th time for people at home. They are a throw-first football team. The Cleveland Browns want to pass the ball early, run the ball late. The only chance to beat the Kansas City Chiefs is to think that you have to go score 40-plus points. You are not going to do that, turning around and handing the ball off.
In fairness, and let me just get Tim back in here, in fairness to Marcus, part of that conversation came up because our FPI projected
right, 20 to 12
Cleveland to beat them 20 to 12, and that kind of skewed the conversation, the idea that you're going to hold Kansas City to 12 points in a game. But it is a worthwhile question, Tim Hasselbeck. To beat Kansas City, which has been the class of the conference for a while and feels like it continues to be, what is the formula?
It's more along with what Dan's saying than what Marcus is saying. Look, here's the thing. Dan just gave you the numbers about what great offenses do. They score half the time, right? That's what they're doing. you get 12 possessions a game. I don't care how many, you know, 9, 10, 12 play drives you put together. You're talking about roughly 12 possessions a game, you know, for each offense. So, like, with that being said, and they're scoring 50% of the time, like, newsflash, you have to also score to beat them. Like, that's how this works. So I think this idea that you're just going to play keep away the entire time, like, I just not realistic. And then, like, I don't know the total context of how Marcus starts going down that direction, but I'm not sure there's ever been an offense or defensive lineman that hasn't, you know, a defensive lineman sitting on the bench yelling at an offense, be like, run the ball. Or an offensive lineman, you know, after a three and out, that's screaming at everybody else on the sideline saying, hey, we need to run the ball. And then as soon as they load the box, they're like, hey, we can't block all those guys. So like,
what's wrong with there's too many people.
More points than them.
Yeah. You know, Kimberly, it is fascinating to me. You do a show with two linemen and they talk about the game in one way, and then you do a show with two quarterbacks, they talk about
it another way. I love the QBs losing their mind over defensive lines.
It's the sense you have as we approach this season. That of the teams in the AFC, if someone's going to knock off Kansas City, does it feel like Cleveland is the likeliest bet?
Likeliest, they're up there. I think it's between Cleveland and Buffalo. I think those two teams are matching. With this game in particular, you know, I was at the Raiders game. Like, I covered that Raiders-Chiefs game at Arrowhead. I watched the team that was not the better team win. And it's because the Raiders were able to go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes. And also, keep in mind, the Chiefs did make some uncharacteristic mistakes, penalties. That's how that game got out of hand. But Derek Carr, he put up points. They scored touchdowns. Like, this is a big test for Baker, for
well,
sure.
I don't know that we're sitting here saying the Browns can't do that, right? They can do that.
Oh, the Browns absolutely can. Yes. I think the Browns are equipped to do it. Now, there is an aspect of, yes, you want to try to minimize Patrick Mahomes' possessions. If you can do that, great. But that can't be your focus. Your focus has got to be, how do we score 40?
Yeah.
It's not score 28. It's how do we score 40? I think the Browns are capable of doing it. Absolutely. Buffalo is capable of doing it. I would say Tennessee is capable of doing it. And then a sleeper would be the Chargers. You have to be able to think, can we go be explosive on offense? It's not ball control. This is not 2002. It is how many different ways can we create explosive plays on offense? If you don't have the quarterback or the scheme to do it, there is no chance of you beating the Chiefs in a game that matters unless their offensive line is decimated.
Well, I'm just monitoring Marcus's Twitter feed because I think the chances of a response. Oh, no, he's already on Twitter this morning. So I guarantee we will hear from the big swagoo, I have no doubt, as the morning continues. Plus, we'll talk about this coming up. I will tell you exactly what the Bears have to do with Justin Fields this weekend. No one agrees with me. That doesn't mean I'm not right. That's next.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Back on Get Up, bearing down on week one. We'll do more or less. Dan Orlovsky, Carson Wentz going to have more or less than 1.5 passing touchdowns against Seattle.
Yeah, I'm going to say less, and I know everyone's like shocked by that answer. First of all, he hasn't practiced a ton because of COVID and the foot injury. Second of all, there's some question marks on the offensive line. What's Quentin Nelson going to look like? Is Fisher going to play? No T.Y. Hilton. I think that Jonathan Taylor is going to be a feature point of this offense, not only this season, but certainly this weekend. I think Carson plays okay. There's going to be some struggles because of the lack of reps, but I'm going to say less than 1.5 touchdowns.
Kimberly, I'm coming to you. Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers will have more or less than 2.5 passing touchdowns against New Orleans.
Greeny, I'm going to say more. Even though Aaron Rodgers is actually 3-4 in the state of Florida, where this game is actually going to be played, I think this is the last dance tour for these two, Devontae Adams and Rodgers. I think he's going to score They're going to put up points this weekend.
Now, the game's being played in Jacksonville because of the hurricane damage in New Orleans. Tim, let me come to you. The Rams will sack Andy Dalton more or less than 3.5 times.
I'm going to say more. Probably a bad answer because Andy Dalton's played enough football. I think he's smart enough to kind of play on time, throw the football away. That being said, I just think it's going to be sheer domination from that Rams front. And if you watch the Bears at all in the preseason, you could see how this would end up being an issue. So I think he's going to get hit a lot. Maybe four is being a little bit too aggressive, but I'm saying more.
That was a very diplomatic way of putting it. You can see how this might be an issue. Speaking of the Bears.
Listen, you know what I'm saying, Greeny.
Yes, no, I know. I think everyone knows exactly what you're saying.
Is it four for Aaron Donald or just the Rams defense?
That this might be the reason that Justin Fields isn't being thrown out there in this first game, one way or another. Yesterday here on this show, Marcus Spears and I disagreed on the Bears' quarterback plan. This was a little bit of that. If Andy Dalton gets hurt week one by Aaron Donald, they should go to Nick Foles next. What do you think?
I think you should stop dreaming and lying to people. If Andy Dalton gets injured and you bring in Nick Foles, you telling everybody that Justin Fields is basically your practice squad quarterback. That's a damn shame.
For the moment, that's what he is.
If he's I don't care about the moment. I care about winning games.
So, I took your usual job of making Marcus Spears mad yesterday.
It's fun, right?
Let me give you my thinking here.
All right.
I would put this in the form of two questions. Is Justin Fields ready to play in the NFL? If the answer to that question is yes, then he should be your starting quarterback. And if the answer is no, then when he goes out on the field should not be determined by how well or badly Andy Dalton plays or whether or not he sprains an ankle in the second quarter of week two. That is my argument. It's as simple as that. What do you think?
Yeah, again, so Justin Fields is ready to play in the NFL. Again, I don't believe that you always know when a quarterback is ready. You either are capable or not. You put him out there and you figure it out. We didn't know Dak Prescott was ready. We didn't know Justin Herbert was ready until they go out there and you watch those young men play. If something happens, I get the aspect of, well, what Andy Dalton does or does not do should not determine Justin Fields being on the field. Let me say this. If Andy Dalton plays poorly, or something happens to him, God forbid, and they don't put Justin Fields on the field, Matt Nagy should be removed of the head coaching duties the very next day. It is a coach's job to figure out what the player can and cannot do. And when you figure those things out, we are not going to do the cannot do stuff. So for all the people who say, well, he's not ready, well, figure out where you don't think he's ready to go operate and don't do a lot of it. And then you figure out the things that he can do and just do a ton of it. You traded your future to go get Justin Fields. If you think that Andy Dalton is not, if something happens to Andy Dalton and you don't get Justin Fields on the field because you believe he's not ready, you have failed as a coach. You have failed as a developer. You have failed to realize what he's capable of and what he's not capable of. There are 60 snaps in a game. It's not like we have to put Justin Fields out there and he's running Patrick Mahomes' offense or Tom Brady's offense. We could put Justin Fields out there and go, you know what? He's great in the movement game. He's great in the play action pass game. He's great in the quarterback run, the zone read game. Great, we'll do a ton of that. We don't have to get an empty set all the time. It is your job to figure that stuff out. And when he goes on the field, do what he does well and don't do what he struggles with.
In many ways, I don't think you and I are necessarily disagreeing. Right, because if all those things are true, then he should be the starting quarterback
on Sunday,
my opinion. Tim Hasselbeck, what do you think? I just want to get another quarterback's opinion in here. What do you think?
Fields should be their starter. And so if Andy Dalton struggles or has to come out of the game, Fields should go in. And, you know, think about some of the examples that that Dan was using. Look, Anthony Lynn thought Tyrod Taylor was going to give them their best option. And guess what?
Yes.
He was wrong. You know, Bill O'Brien thought Tom Savage was going to give them their best option. Guess what? Deshaun Watson was going to give them their best option to win. Like, sometimes good is just good, okay? And whatever your limitations may be as a young player, there have been quarterbacks with many more limitations than Justin Fields has that have come in and played well as rookies. Because of the stuff, you know, doing things that the guy does well, doing things that he's comfortable doing, which is what Dan is referring to. So, like, Fields should play. He should be playing now. He was the better quarterback in the preseason. And so, quite honestly, he gives them a better chance to win football games starting week one, in my opinion.
Kmart.
I'm with you on the logic, because I feel like if Justin Fields isn't ready, then clearly don't just think, oh, because Andy Dalton's hurt, Andy Dalton is not playing well, that we've got to then go to Justin Fields. I'm with you on that. I agree with Marcus, though. If you were to go to Foles, that is a huge indictment on the process. What are we doing? And if you're a Bears fan, here's what you have to look at the context of all the decisions that have been made. There's a franchise that signed Mike Glennon, did not know what to do with Mitch Trubisky. He did not fare well in this system. How he was used, you can ask questions about Nagy. How is Mitch Trubisky used in that offense? So now you have Justin Fields, a guy that clearly is more talented, but how you handle him, what you do with him, it's about the next 10 years, not just the next few weeks.
If they put Nick Foles on the field before they put Justin Fields on the field, fire everybody. Fire the whole organization. When we talk about quarterbacks being ready, ready for what? What are they incapable of being ready for? You can take your playbook that is 100 pages and minimize it down to 20. That is not saying someone intellectually can't handle it. It's going, we're not going to expose him to the things that the NFL brings, but I know he's capable of doing this. So we're going to do a ton of it.
But let me, I'm on that side. I believe he should be playing if he's ready to play. But the argument on the other side, and I didn't ask the guys to have the video ready yet, but you've all seen it. The play against Buffalo, where he has no idea where the pressure is coming from. And the next, we have it. Great. So the next thing you know, his helmet, and we're all relieved
everything
that not his head
changed right
flying
here.
Everything away down
could
the
have
field.
Changed
this
right here.
This is the reason.
Yes.
To me, right that's there. What I'd be worried about.
And I get that. But my pushback would be this. Number one, this is what a coach should do. Hey, in pressure situations, the offensive line, it's completely on you. Tim, you know this. The offensive line handles all protection. Justin, you don't get to say anything. You just have to know where they're going and where they're not going. Or you say, Justin, you're in complete control of everything. Offensive line, you guys don't talk, you only listen. Justin, you tell them where to go, and then you know the issues. But I've also broken down a blitz against Penn State that was very similar to this, and I watched Justin Fields go to line of scrimmage, communicate it, tell everybody it was hot, the blitz comes, and it's a touchdown. It's not, are you incapable of it? It's, what is the plan by us as an offense? And that's why I say, if this happens with Nick Foles on the field, then fire the whole organization, because you obviously are incapable of taking the young quarterback and moving him forward.
Tim, explain for everyone what exactly it is that we saw there and whose responsibility it is to make sure Justin Fields doesn't get hit like that whenever it is he gets on the field.
Well, it's Justin's responsibility to know what's going on. What happens here is the line's sliding one way, the blitz is coming from the other side. He needs to know it and should get the ball out of his hands so he doesn't take a hit like he took. The truth is, quarterbacks with no experience and quarterbacks with experience get fooled sometimes. In that same preseason game, saw a very similar blitz. Now, maybe he dumbed into it, but he sees it and gets rid of the ball and doesn't take a hit. Part of how you learn not to do that again is to have that happen. Like, guess what? Like, when you tell a kid, like, hey, don't touch the stove, okay? They're like, that sounds great. And then they touch the stove and they're like, yeah, you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe I shouldn't have touched the stove. Justin Fields he touched the stove. Like, the best way to learn it isn't watching Andy Dalton get hit in the chin. It's getting hit in the chin. And so, Kimberly is saying, look, it's not about right now. It's about the next 10 years. Well, you learn quicker, actually touching the stove.
So what is your sense, Kimberly? Just want to put a ribbon on this. And then Brian Bork, my producer, will figure out how to pick up the pieces of everything we didn't get to. But this was well worth it. What is the sense around the league of how they're going to play this thing out?
Oh, the sense around the league is that Andy Dalton has a short leash. I think everybody on that team and that organization is excited about Justin Fields. So if Andy Dalton does not play well and if they are not winning games, we may not even need to have this discussion because Justin Fields will be on the field fairly soon.
All right, as we continue in just a moment, this stuff, which we didn't get to, and we will also explain the inexplicable for you, exactly how this team still has an excellent chance to win the championship despite a suspect start on Saturday night. That's next.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Football is back on DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. This Sunday only, new players can play free for a $1 million top prize when you make your first deposit. Download the DraftKings app and sign up with the code GETUP. And so for this week, our question related to our DraftKings picks is, who will have more passing yards, Zach Wilson or Sam Darnold? Kimberly?
Oh.
Tread lightly. Who do you like?
I forgot. This is your show, Greeny.
You tread
I should
dreams.
Probably. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to say Sam Darnold, and it's easy. It's not even close to me. Now, will Zach Wilson be a better player? Yeah, I got you there.
Wow.
But Sam Darnold, look at this. This offense, he's paired up with Robbie Anderson, a guy that he's got chemistry with. He's got all the weapons that he needs. Zach Wilson, give it some time.
Yes, I don't know that Sam Darnold will. It's, by his standards, an embarrassment of riches that they've surrounded him with in Carolina. So, Tim, to you, who'll throw for more yards, Zach or Sam?
Sam Darnold, embarrassment of riches. You sounded wounded there, Greeny, saying that. Look, he's got a better supporting cast. His own team has a better defense, which obviously Zach Wilson,
yep,
you know, will face. And you just think about some of the hidden yards. If we talk about Christian McCaffrey and things like that on easy throws. So, to me, I think this ends up being a fairly easy one as well.
How about you, Dan?
Yeah, obviously, Sam Darnold. I'm here for the train. Tread lightly when how we say about who's going to be the best player as well, Kimberly. You know, like,
I'm just trying to keep my seat here.
I think he goes for 300. I really do. The Jets gave up 275 a game via the air last year. This is a team that has McCaffrey, Terrace Marshall Jr. out of LSU, Robbie Anderson, and DJ Moore. Joe Brady's going to become a head coach in the NFL. This is week one of kind of that campaign. Sam goes for over 300.
3 years from now, who will we say is the better quarterback?
I'll tell you in 3 years.
Okay.
Fair enough.
My answer is Zach Wilson because it doesn't make any difference what the question is. My answer is Zach Wilson.
When
you can ask
out.
Me anything you want. Literally. What I have.
Come on,
lunch.
Sam!
Ask me anything you want. Ask me what I had for lunch. The answer is Zach Wilson. We actually have an appointment at the DMV today. We are renaming our children. My son will from now on be Zach, and my daughter will be Wilson. So we'll see how this thing goes. Couldn't have been a worse week one matchup, but such is life. Okay, in the meantime, let's talk about something entirely different. Let's talk about the second AP poll for this college football season, which is out.
So and
the
SEC has the top two spots.
Alabama on top. Georgia is second. It's the earliest that a conference has had the top two teams since 1987. Ohio State is at 3. They erased a second-half deficit against Minnesota to win on a Thursday night last week. And then Clemson, after their big loss, that's really the big one we were looking for. Where would they fall to? They're at number 6. They're outside the top 5 for the first time in 57 weeks. Dabo Swinney, your thoughts.
We certainly got a lot to learn from that game. We got a lot to improve on, especially offensively, but we will. I think we got a chance to be one of the better teams we've had around here. I love these guys. If we'd have won 10-3, we'd have the same problems. We'd be sitting here today with the same issues. And what I saw, this team has what it takes. And so that's exciting to me as we move forward.
All right, so that's a good perspective for him to have. And he'll like this. Our All-State playoff predictor still gives Clemson a 48% chance to make the playoff. As you see, it's one of the 4 best chances of any team, and it is slightly ahead of the team that beat them the other night, and that would be Georgia. So with Dan here, I want to bring in Heather and Paul. And Heather, let's start with you. We talked at great length about how important this game was to Clemson based upon the rest of their schedule. So do you agree with that predictor? As of this moment, do you still believe Clemson has a better chance to make the playoff than Georgia?
No, I don't agree with it, because I will tell you what the people in the selection committee room will say to that. And they will say, yes, while Clemson certainly probably has a better shot to win its conference championship because it's an easier road than Georgia has, they will consider the head-to-head result. If they deem these teams comparable, two of the tiebreakers are conference championships and head-to-head results. The question is, do they think they are comparable? And I would say no. If it's a close game in the SEC championship and Georgia loses, I mean, you're setting up two teams in the SEC here if both Clemson and Georgia only finish with one loss.
Again, Alabama, Georgia are 1 and 2 in the poll right now. Paul Feinbaum, if you had to bet that palatial estate that you live in right now on one of these two teams ultimately making it to the playoff, Clemson or Georgia, which one you got?
It's Georgia, and Greeny, you know, I'm a child of the 70s. I want what that playoff predictor is smoking, because that is ridiculous. There's no way to justify that, and Heather laid it out perfectly. The head-to-head, it may very well come down to these two schools, and there's not a chance in the world you can go with Clemson over Georgia, not only head-to-head, but what the two of them will face the rest of the way. We laid this out earlier in the week, and for those who were sleeping on Labor Day, I'll lay it out again. The ACC is terrible. It was a disaster for them, and Georgia plays in the SEC, and they'll get to play Florida, they'll play Alabama, and they'll have a much better resume.
Okay, fair enough. So that is all well and good. Let me ask you a different question, Dan. As an analyst, in your opinion, are there four better teams in the country than Clemson?
Right now, yes, absolutely. Because, first of all, Clemson's offensive scheme has become too dependent on the talent around it. You know, when we talk about coaching and scheme, when it comes to talent, it should either extend a gap or minimize a gap. Teams that aren't as talented as others, it should minimize that gap with really great coaching. Or teams that are better, Alabama, their scheme makes them even greater. Clemson's, over the last 2 years, it's really done the opposite. It's widened the gap of teams that they may not be as talented as. And if you look at, I love Clemson and I love Dabo. We also got to be honest about them, Greeny. The last three times that they have played an opponent equal to talent across the line, they've been whooped.
Yeah.
They've been whooped. LSU, Ohio, and outcoached. LSU, Ohio State, and now Georgia the other night. They have been out-hit and out-coached. That's just the reality. And so the scheme has got to get either better or different real quickly. I don't think Clemson is going anywhere, though. I do not believe that they are just going to fall off the college football planet.
Yeah. Hembo made the point with us yesterday that maybe what we're seeing right now is more about the immortality of Nick Saban and what Alabama has done than the mortality of Clemson. They're still obviously a powerhouse program, but when you compare everybody to Alabama, everybody looks bad. So with that thought in mind, let me put up their Caesars Sportsbook's odds to win the national championship this year. And you see Alabama, a prohibitive favorite, Georgia right behind them, or behind them, Ohio State close behind, and then Clemson down there. So let me put the question, because there's no point in my asking anyone on this panel who they think is going to win the title. Let me ask it to you this way. Heather, who has the best chance to unseat Alabama in their current role? Who has the best chance if it isn't them?
Greeny, give me the team in November that is ranked in the top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency, because that's what it's going to take, and that's typically, historically, what the teams have in the top four who are in the semifinals. So to me, that's Georgia or Ohio State. I think Georgia has to put it together offensively, show us more. I think they have the capability to do that. On Ohio State, I think it's the flip for them. Let's see some more defensively from them. I'm going to the game in Columbus against Oregon. What can they do defensively to make those strides? But to me, it's one of those two teams for sure.
Paul Feinbaum, how about you? If it isn't going to be your buddy Saban this year, who's it going to be?
Yeah, I want to see what happens Saturday night where Heather's going to be, because if Ohio State looks very good, then I think they move to the top. I'm still not giving up on Oklahoma. I know they look terrible against Tulane, but I still believe in that program, and I think they'll come back. But ultimately, I think it's Georgia. Georgia, to me, looks like the heavyweight that can knock off Alabama finally. Now, I've said that a few times before and been wrong.
It would be interesting, because if Georgia were to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game, they probably would have to beat them again to win, right? They probably are looking at having to beat Alabama twice if they're going to win the championship. It's tough to picture a scenario where Bama isn't in the playoff. What do you think, Dan? If not Bama, then who?
First of all, I think it's funny that Finebaum tried to say he's a child of the 70s. We know you're a lot older than that, Finebaum, so don't try to sell that over here. I think it's Georgia, because to beat Alabama, you got to have butts. You got to have dudes with big butts. Like that's just the way to put it. In that conference, it's about having big backsides at the line of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. And Georgia's the one team that at least can be capable to play at the line of scrimmage with Alabama.
Okay, fair enough. You threw me off with so many of the things you just said there. I'll just give it to Heather
child
for a final word. Because candidly, I'm not sure how to follow up either of those
gotta
things
butts, man.
Without saying butts. Something that will get me in trouble. So, Heather, put a ribbon on all this here. As you looked at the poll yesterday and everything that we've seen so far, what's the most important stuff fans need to know?
There are more than five teams that are better than Clemson right now. I'm floored at the AP poll. They lost. You can criticize Oklahoma and Oregon, Iowa State, all you want. Those teams won. Clemson, based on week one, to me, not even top 10. They scored 3 points.
Wow. I mean, they actually scored 10 points, but seven of them with the other team. So that's an extremely well-made point. All right, Paul Feinbaum, thank you very much. Heather, thank you very much. This has been just a delight. By the way, tennis coming up. The U.S. Open men's and women's quarters continue today on ESPN and ESPN Plus at noon Eastern, and then continue at 7 Eastern with 4 hours in prime time. And as always, you can watch every point streaming live on ESPN Plus. All right, coming up, Tom Brady is about to go off. You will hear one member of our crew say this could be the best season he's had in 14 years. Don't miss it. Next.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.